Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Sarah is new to the engineering department. I forgot your title.
Project engineer.
Right. Ron Romeis will be soon retiring. Sarah will take the assistant director's job. It's kind of planned that way, but Sarah used to work for Arnold and Sheridan?
Ayers.
See, I'm batting a thousand. She's a consulting engineer. So now she's with us doing project engineering. And I'm sorry, Alderman Wilhelm's constituent left. Who said, here's the woman that engineered the project. So Sarah, please give us your pitch.
Okay, thank you. Yes, like Joel said, really all of the changes were just mandated by the DNR, and these rules have been in effect for years. So any consultant that has done the job has been following these because they've had to follow the DNR rules. It's mandated. Franklin became an MS4. It's a municipal separate storm sewer system. And as part of that, we are mandated to bring our ordinance into compliance with them. We can either match them or be stricter. We just cannot be more lenient, which Joel kind of brought up with the natural resources. And you did receive a track changes copy of the ordinance. You can see what we changed. And like I said, it's all things that have been followed. No one's going to be surprised by it when they see it. It's just now we're going to match. I was speaking with Joel. We did find a few small, practically typo-type things that we did change since that went out there. They don't change any meanings or requirements, but I just did want to mention that there were those. We marked where those were if anyone needs to see that. Very insignificant. But other than that, I guess you can go through each one. I certainly won't go through all the changes here, but are there any particular questions on it?
Commissioner Haley.
Yes, actually I have some questions, some comments, and I don't know how we do this, but we can just click
through. Well, we haven't opened a public hearing yet, so let me open a public hearing. This is a public hearing regarding this matter. Anyone from the public wishing to speak? Anyone from the public wishing to speak? Alderman Wilhelm. You could do it now or later. That's fine by us.
Well, might be more appropriate a little later on after I hear some of the other comments, but I have some questions about the comment that was made about the 1,000 Friends of Wisconsin and their suggestions. There were no suggestions listed, so I didn't really understand if that was something that would be taken up later or if they incorporated.
They had sent emails, and we incorporated all of the ones that we could into there. Some of their changes are in here.
Okay.
They were through emails they had sent us, and we had had several meetings with them. And through emails and other memo-type things they'd given us, we included some of their notes in the ones that we really felt applied into the revision.
Specifically, I was trying to understand which ones you might felt were so important that made changes for as far as blocking green infrastructure or...
We never were blocking it. They just wanted us to kind of push it, if you will. So if you look, there's several places where it used to just say detention basins. Now it says detention and or infiltration and or green. There's several places. That was really what they wanted to pump. They just didn't want people thinking we have to put in a detention basin. No, you can put in permeable pavers. You can put in bioretention. So we added the word green infrastructure several times in the revision.
And then on, this is page 34 on mine now.
Alderman, city engineer's got a clarification.
Just for the rest of the planning commission, 1,000 Friends of Wisconsin acquired a contract with MMSD to go around and look at city ordinances who discharge into MMSD. And so we met with them at least two or three times. They met with Joel. They walked through our ordinances. They did a complete review of our UDO and some of the ordinances, and like Sarah said, their goal was to how can we make things more green, and we provided this to them, and they reviewed it and added a half dozen comments that they suggested, so incorporated those.
Because I know we got the first draft of this in March, beginning of April. And it wasn't the same as all of these. And then in the council packet, there was no version. It was just an action sheet. So the council hasn't really seen all these new revised changes, so I just want to make sure the plan commission knew that. That was a little bit different version that was reviewed by the council members. So.
There were only real slight tweaks since that last one. I did go through it after you spoke with Glenn last week. I think that was from the discussion I had with Joel on the protective areas. I think were the only places that really. And then you had given us some comments, so we incorporated those. But other than typos and things like that, that was all that's changed. I did go through that draft. It was very similar.
I didn't recall anything about the protective areas in that draft, so I was...
They were in there.
So, I know there were some changes, and you're saying that the council didn't see that since those changes, whether they were large or small or whatever. I just wanted to make sure. So on this is item I under on page 34. It says, for concentrated flow channels with drainage areas greater than 30 acres, the setback is 10 feet. So I know in the past we had natural waterways called drainage areas and provide little to no setbacks. And now in my district, I have homes that are flooding because of that. So I don't know if 10 feet really does that. If we're going to classify a natural drainage way that can fluctuate from rainfall significantly, if 10 feet will be enough. So I guess I would like some additional consideration in looking at when you're calling flow channels and drainage ways with those type of fluctuations, if that we might want to look at more of a stream type of setback or at least a wetland type of setback, because 10 feet in my district would not prevent the water problems that I'm having in some of the areas.
Would I apply to Hidden Lakes? I don't think so. Would it?
What's that?
Item I don't think would approve apply to them, would it? Not 130
it's,
acres.
It's not
or whatever. Trails, yeah. Woodlands, or where? At any rate, it wouldn't apply.
And it's not necessarily just, you know, the 130-acre thing, but I don't know how many total acres are over there. I don't remember. But I think it was like a 40-acre parcel. So, but I'm just concerned about that. We have over in Alderwoman Mayer's district, there's a really rapid-flowing water body that goes through the state natural area, and that thing can fluctuate really significantly. And so I don't know how many branches of that come off of that, but maybe it's just a matter of looking at that when the approval comes in or something rather than making a change. But I just don't think 10 feet on something that fluctuates is adequate.
Thank you, Alderman. Anyone else wishing to speak on this matter? Seeing none, I will close the public hearing.
Never mind, sorry.
That's two in a week.
All right, the public hearing is closed. Questions and comments from the commission to staff. Commissioner Haley.
Okay. Questions, comments. Maybe I'll just go through them in an order, and we'll try to make this quick. I guess I first want to commend staff. This is a substantial effort, and it was done pretty well. So as I make my comments, keep that in mind, because I'm just trying to see clarity. And we'll just go right through this. On... And I'm just for you, I'm working from the ordinance.
Okay.
The modified changes, just so we can keep page numbers straight. Under section one, and you referenced it briefly, we're deleting reference to basins, settling in water quality basins, and then inserting infiltration. Is there some reason we can't be inclusive of all of those?
Okay.
Because there are still basins out there. There will still be basins proposed.
And I think... let me find the actual, that's 80112.
And while you look, my point being, it could certainly just read basins, settling and water quality basins, and infiltration, biofiltration. We couldn't be including all of those.
Actually, it now reads, those are included at the front end. It now reads, it reads curb and gutters, catch basins, inland storm sewers, road ditches, open channels, water retention and detention structures, then the infiltration, biofiltration basins, and other green infrastructure. So those are still in there.
Okay,
so
for those of us playing along or scoring along, page 8-4, under stormwater drainage facilities, and I'm amazed that I found that so quickly.
It's
a descriptive paragraph right under it. For those who are playing along, scoring along with us.
Okay, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So it was a deletion to restructure the paragraph.
And that was probably a 1,000 Friends of Wisconsin?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Page 2, item H. I'm just curious as to when we speak of the creation from one parcel of five. You seeing that?
That?
Page at the bottom of the page on page 2.
Right in the middle of the paragraph.
Yeah.
That is the one, though, that I think was edited after the. I think that's one of the ones I said was edited. I think that's why mine's
okay.
A little off.
What would the number be? It just seems carving five parcels from one is just, I would think
sure.
That something like two or three might be more appropriate.
I think. Is this under definitions?
Yes.
Okay. If I'm looking at the right spot, it now reads division of land means where the title or part thereof of land is transferred by the execution of a land contract, an option to purchase, an offer to purchase, an acceptance, a deed, a subdivision plat, or a certified survey map. So that number isn't in there. That was one that we edited.
Okay, so how do we address the division of a single parcel if it's not done by a CSM?
That, I guess, I think this definition came out of the DNR ordinance.
Please.
Mr. Flips.
A single parcel being divided into two separate parcels, mm-hmm. And that will have to be done via CSM. That will be the application for the...
Yeah, and what I'm questioning is not so much the methodology, but why the threshold is set at five. If it's one parcel into five, saying that reference is gone?
Yes.
We'll move on.
That was easy.
On page 3, item Q, and I'm going to talk to this a little bit later, but I'm just going to say that some of those standards are very subjective. Things like cost effectiveness, competing issues. So I get what we're getting at there, and I'm going to talk about it more later. But
MEP is a DNR term, so that came right from them.
And that's what I assumed. And it's probably not critical here, but it will make more sense in one of my other comments. And I guess I'm going to jump to page 5. Applicability of maximum extent practicable. And with all due respect to city engineer, the engineering staff, I'm questioning, because of the subjectiveness of these criteria, basically we're looking at exceptions. We're putting that entire ability to make those exceptions in the hand of the city engineer. Not that he couldn't make that, but I'm thinking that these are the sort of decisions that maybe should be made by the council upon a recommendation of the city engineer. Not talking to anybody in particular, but someone could make a significant argument that, you know, it's cost too much. I don't like that. And it forces someone, the city engineer, to make a subjective decision of weighing these things over. There are those that would say, well, that offers some flexibility. But I think any time that you're approving an exception to standards, that may need a higher level of scrutiny. So I just think it would be more appropriate if we get into a situation where, I'm looking at, we're coming up with exceptions for a lower level of performance. And I just think, and that's in here in several places, that may be something that we may want to raise to a higher level of scrutiny. Because basically you would have one person, city engineer, whoever it is, making a decision that we're not going to enforce these standards. They've offered enough of a determination of hardship.
That, again, came directly from the DNR. We can always go stricter. As they said, we just can't go more lenient. That was one of the... They sent us certain items in yellow that had to be put right in. Those we didn't have options in. All of the MEP stuff falls under that. But if we want to go stricter, we can.
It's an issue for the council. I bring it up because we're putting a lot of authority to waive standards or reduce standards in the hand of one person. And that may or may not be appropriate. But I'd hate to see a trend where all you got to do is squawk a little bit about the cost or the hardship of it, and we're ignoring the standards.
Can I play devil's
advocate? To contemplate.
Can I play devil's advocate?
You may.
As a judgment call based on a technical issue, you really want politicians involved in that? Seems to me they'd sway quicker than staff.
Checks and balances is all I'm saying. You're putting a lot of authority in one person's hands. And again, city engineer should and does know what he's doing, but these are decisions that may have significant impacts down the line, especially if they're cumulative. I don't really have a position on this. I think this is something that the council should talk about. Where does this authority ultimately lie?
I would like to say if it is a requirement out of DNR's NR 151, they do have to require any MEP allowances that the city would allow if something is not meeting requirement, if it falls under a DNR requirement.
They have to approve it.
Yes. If we were to allow someone to infiltrate less, the DNR would have to approve it.
So how does that process work then? So there's been a proposal to reduce... City engineer makes a determination it's okay, and then we send correspondence to the DNR saying, do you concur, or are we relying on them to pick up on it and enforce it somehow?
Any project that comes in comes to us first. It's the same with MMSD and DNR. They expect us to review it, but it goes to them eventually anyways. I know with every project I've ever reviewed for municipality, I'm always talking with the DNR. Everyone else I know always is as well. Especially if there's something like that, because if they get the final SLAM model and it shows a 30% TSS removal instead of 40, it's going to set them off right away. They're going to see all of these eventually. So as far as I know, the reviewers always work with them. I certainly do.
And that is part of the essence of my questions is we're initiating a new process here. Some of the standards are going to change, and I would assume our review checklists and everything will have to be updated, that we'll be looking for different things in plan submittals from here on in.
Grafe should have been looking for these for the past 10 years is how long the rules have been in effect.
And I know not if they are. Again, this is something that I picked up. It's in here in several places where that authority is being granted, and I'm not saying it's inappropriate. I just think it's something the council may want to consider.
Sure.
You'd hate to get in a situation where somebody was cutting sweetheart deals, for example, just because they felt like it. Don't know.
Don't get accused that too often.
Yeah.
I understand. There's a lot of eyes. And it appears in many places down below in B.
As an alternate suggestion, certainly the council shouldn't take the matter up, but as an alternate suggestion, we do have some environmental expertise on the planning staff. So concurrence of both the planning manager and the city engineer might be a way to streamline it. I'm not looking to extend time limits here.
Agreed. Or make it more difficult, onerous, but maybe the concurrence of two separate staff divisions. I don't know.
Yeah.
Council's purview.
I guess I'm trying to think this through. So, I mean, it's conceivable that the project could get approved by council, and then during the tech review, something comes up, and then I'd sure hate to have to go back to council for just for one issue kind of thing. I guess the question is, would we review it before it gets to council the first time? So then if it doesn't add any time to it, I guess that doesn't bother me to send to council. The only concern is then, because then you got the added pressure of, why does it, it's got to go back to council.
I'm not trying to make it more difficult, but it's checks and balances.
Yes, you are.
No, checks and balances. I mean, and the one that scares me the most is that they're able to put some sort of credence on excessive costs. So if a developer says, I'm not doing that, that costs too much, Where's the, what do you judge that against? What is too much?
And my counter to that, playing devil's advocate, there's more experience on these folks' part judging cost than there is on these folks' part. So,
I'm a firm believer in trusting your experts, but again, this is final decisions being made.
May I suggest we think...
I'm okay, I'm just being devil's advocate here.
That's why I'm bringing this stuff up.
May I suggest maybe we just think about it and we can put together a comment for council to consider?
I'm not asking for any changes.
Okay.
All of these are just really questions or comments that I think if we're moving this forward, the council should consider. All right. I've gone to page 8. And I guess that's Romanet 3. Notwithstanding, if BMPs cannot be designed and implemented...
Page
8. Top first full paragraph. Romanet 3. If BMPs cannot be designed and implemented, what are the criteria for that? We're getting at the same sort of thing. Are there defined criteria? I mean, what if I just say, I can't do that?
Again, it would be site-specific, but everyone would have to agree, and this is erosion control, so that would have to include the DNR. It's pretty rare that you can't meet the standards on a construction site. I honestly don't know if I've ever seen one in 15 years. I don't think I have. That would be extremely specific, and they would absolutely need DNR approval because you need a DNR permit to have a construction site. So it'd be very rare.
Thought might be is that might be a spot where you could do an IE or give further clarification on what those criteria might be. Don't know, because it does go on to say that the developer needs to provide a written explanation of why. Same thing as we move down to C. I would point out, just for future reference, it speaks to minimization of soil compaction, and that's always been one of the things that I've noticed in a lot of the site plans that come in front of us. They're interested in the end product, where the building goes, where the parking lot, and not compacting the heck out of everything else. So this implies a higher level of diligence on our part, because soil compaction is a serious part of BMPs. And it's pretty much common practice. The dozers pretty much will work over an entire site if they're allowed. Comment. When we get to 3, I'm just going to make a point here that we have of late gotten into the practice when it was deemed appropriate to use best available data in reviewing and approving site plans and things like that. This language will not allow for that from my read. Everything is driven by delineations, right? So the wetlands have to be delineated. The dimensions, the setbacks, the impacts are all done in that. So it's just an anecdotal thing for us as we move forward that the natural resource protection standards, all development will now need to have a DNR-compliant delineation done beforehand. And we have, as of late, for the last several years, with simpler, more straightforward projects, just said, look, we'll just go based upon the best available knowledge, including floodplain mapping. But as I read this, it will call for specific wetland delineations on every project.
As of June 1st, any disturbance over an acre requires that if there's a known wetland or hydric soils on the site. That is DNR, yes.
And this is to staff, to all of us. This is something we will now need to pay attention to. Developers coming in and saying, I'll do the delineation later. We'll worry about the permitting after we've got the approvals. Isn't going to fly with this. D, under location, and it's just a note, so I'm not sure it's germane, but while regional treatment facilities are appropriate for control of post-construction, they should not be used for construction site sediment removal. Is that supposed to be a shall? And I don't want to get into that business, but we either are or we not.
That came straight from the DNR.
Still ending.
You're right, it should be shall. unless maybe there would be I can't imagine a time when the DNR would allow that, but maybe they would. they're pretty good about the shoulds and shalls.
Perhaps if they're being constructed at the same time.
Sure.
I guess that would be an example where you could do them both at the same time because you're going to clean it out when you clean up the site. Or you could have a regional that maybe has a four bay where maybe you're using part of that.
It's semantics. I'm not going to argue it. I'm asking the question. Is that more appropriate to be a shall than a should? Should means, yeah, maybe.
You're not going
to
argue with it. You are.
That's what we're here for, right? Let's move through this. You may. What?
I think I'm okay with should. Because I rare occasions, but I can see where that happened.
I've seen a should in the note. That's what I'm saying. Maybe the note isn't relevant.
Just for the record, the city attorney has pointed out that in the actual document, it does not say should.
Well, it says shall above. The note says should.
Right. That's all I was pointing out.
Alderman Wilhelm.
I don't know if this is addressing here, but just because it says shall, that the sediment control practice shall be constructed or installed. Can we put somewhere where they shall remove all that black soap? For instance, this stuff's going to vary all of this.
That's true.
Either lawn finds it buried underneath.
Number five does say that the BMP shall be removed by the responsible party.
Well, I think what Alderman Wilhelm's asking for is entirely reasonable, because she's absolutely correct. I mean, you go to houses are up, and they haven't done their landscaping yet, but boy, they sure got erosion. I mean, and they've been working on their landscaping.
Including but not limited to.
But there's no time period on theirs, what the Alderman was saying, I believe. So,
she says when
60 days
when final grade has been reached on any portion of the site up in 3. Which is the standard we're not used to enforcing either.
But do we want to have final grade and no grass and then remove this, the silt fence? I don't think so.
No. The silt fence is supposed to stay in place until the site stabilizes. And to that end, I was going to suggest on item 5 that we could also include, so that it reads, BMPs that are no longer necessary for erosion and sediment control shall be removed and the site restored, or the impacted areas restored by the responsible party. One of the biggest things I see. The site's all put back together. They wait, they come, they rip the silt fence out. There's a 4-inch deep ditch of mud that's just left there with no vegetation growing on it. Defeats the purpose. So it's always in the best interest to go back and fine grade that area and throw some seed down.
Okay. Absolutely agree. But again, back to the Alderman's point, which has now become my point, we need to put a time frame on here, and we'll look to the staff to recommend something like that. That's enforceable.
I guess I would suggest, I think I heard the concern is the fact that these fences are getting buried, they're deteriorating. Yep. I mean, they are required to keep them in good repair, so if they're in that kind of shape, they're required to pull them out and put new ones in.
Yes.
We should be
My comment is at completion, when the site is established, it's the last thing that's supposed to be usually does, and usually they just get torn out, and now you've got a scar. Yeah. That traps water.
I think I understood two issues we're talking about here.
Right.
So.
Yep.
Right, maybe. I'm sorry. Page 9, item 4, 14 calendar days. You need to tell me where that's coming from. This is temporary stabilization activities shall commence when land disturbing activities have temporarily ceased and will not resume for a period of 14. Seems excessive.
I'm pretty sure that's out
I
of
thought
the DNR.
DNR was 7 days, but.
We'll check it.
Check it. Thank you. Yeah, we'll get through this, and I'm almost done here.
That's why you're on the commission.
I appreciate that. That's why I went through the document in great detail. Great
that
personal
is out of
expense. it's a good read.
That is out of the DNR. I just found
it. 14 days?
Yes.
We could be more restrictive. That means we can let a raw pile of dirt sit there for 14 days.
I think somewhere, though...
You're supposed to put temporary covers on it.
Right. There's another item somewhere that does talk about, like, seeding topsoil stockpiles after 7. That may be in the full...
Maybe my misunderstanding. I thought 7 days was the threshold. Revisited. I am on page 11, item 5.
Which one?
I'm sorry, the top item 5. That would be C5. Failure by a city engineer designated to inform the permit applicant of a decision. Basically, what we're saying here, if we don't act and make a decision within 15 days, it's deemed approved. I know the DNR uses that sort of language. This is an area where I think we should be being more restrictive. We shouldn't be giving automatic approvals to anybody. Failure by the city engineer or designee to inform the permit applicant of a decision within 15 days of a required submittal shall be deemed to mean the approval of the submittal.
So you're going to say shall not be deemed?
Oh,
I like that.
Or did you want to extend the time?
You either extend the time or get rid of the paragraph.
Or you just go through a process until the city engineer responds. It gets to the issue that's been discussed at the state level about how long should developers have to wait? Well, until we've made up our mind should be our answer. A bureaucratic deadline means if the city engineer is sick and can't respond in time, in a timely manner, it's approved.
This is the attorney.
Only that DNR might interpret that as not a type of subject matter that is 10 feet versus 15 feet, where you judge whether or not it's more restrictive. It might be a requirement for timeliness as opposed to more restrictive or less restrictive. So staff will take a look at it.
And I know that they do that in the interest of timeliness, but we have the opportunity to be a bit more restrictive. I hate to see anybody getting a pass just because of a time delay.
I agree with you're not getting a pass. I don't agree with not being timely.
I agree. But you handle the not being timely by staffing and having people in enough bodies to do a review in a timely manner, but people get sick.
We're kind of informal here. Commissioner Hogan?
Can we add time on it instead of the... 15 days, can you add more time?
Staff's going to take a look at it. Commissioner Haley.
Page 14 at the top, item A, that's just another reference. This is where we're going to get into issue with the practice of best available data.
Sorry,
we're requiring specific delineations, definitions of these areas.
14A.
We can move on.
Two A's.
I'm sorry, could you explain?
Page 14, the letter A, top of the page.
Top of the page.
Is the best available issue again.
Right. So these things need to be identified. We won't have the flexibility anymore. Working from GIS data, for example.
I don't think it says best available.
It appears what? Excuse me?
14, top of the page A. I don't see where it says best available.
No, I'm saying best available. We, over the last several years, we've had very strict natural resource protection rules. And with lesser developments, if you will, or smaller ones, or a thing where you can look at an aerial photograph and see that there's no trees, no vegetation, it made sense.
I see.
But here, if there are natural resource features, they will need to be identified, delineated, and showed on the map. We'll lose some flexibility is what I'm trying to point out.
So
and I don't
says,
know that we can get around it. I'm just making everybody aware.
Okay.
We're now using someone else's standards besides ours. I'm on page 18, number 2F. We're making an exception for they do not apply to construction. Underground utility construction such as water, sewer, and fiber optic lines. They are an exception. I'm in concurrence with that. If these things are directionally drilled, but just we're not allowing above ground structures, but we're in essence allowing underground structures to be installed in an invasive way that would may actually be worse than above ground. So my suggestion would be something to the effect of underground utility construction such as water, sewer, and fiber optic lines, if they are done using non-invasive techniques, directional drilling, that type of thing. We're wide open there. And many times, that's where the actual environmental impacts happen on our site. We come through and rip the utilities, the storm, the sanitary sewer. And if those are being done up front, you got some trouble.
And they only mentioned fiber optic lines.
Because
does that include
exactly? It's underground utility construction is, I think, what's relevant, and we would like to see that. They can do this stuff surgically, or they can do it with large bulk equipment and make a mess of a site.
Well, my question is does that mean that if Time Warner is running, chooses to run copper, is that excluded from this?
Not if they install it surgically rather than open cutting to the trencher through the middle of a woodland or a wetland.
I agree to that, but it says and fiber optic lines. It doesn't say.
A lot of times they can slice it too. That's not too bad for.
I understand. That's why I was suggesting something that's like non-invasive.
You guys aren't getting it. I agree with that.
Yeah,
I agree with that.
Yeah, I thought I got what you were
but
saying.
But
it shouldn't specify
example,
fiber.
That's right.
It should just say underground utility construction.
Yeah.
I guess I'm trying to imagine the workload every time somebody wants a new cable hookup. Run through their backyard. I mean, it's always been exempted.
If they're doing it through the middle of a wetland, it's a significant issue. If it's coming through the lawn in the backyard, not a problem. We're talking about sensitive areas here.
So then you're at, every time somebody wants cable hookup, then you have to have the wetland delineated?
If it seems apparent, we've got state and federal laws that protect wetlands, and the cable company isn't supposed to be ripping through them without prior review, approval, and permits in hand.
But this is from DNR, right?
DNR would actually only come into play if they were disturbing over an acre.
In terms of pulling the trigger on a permit, but if someone went in with a piece of construction equipment and did damage to a wetland, they're going to face state and federal wrath. The wetlands are protected. There's not an exception for utility installation that I'm aware of.
Although it would actually have to be delineated. I just spoke with Pete Wood on this 2 days ago about that site we were looking to fill. And there are possible wetlands on the property that have not been delineated. And he said if they were going to fill more than an acre, they'd have to have them delineated. If not, technically, they could fill the site, even though there may be wetlands. Federal wouldn't come into account for something that small.
What if it's attached to a navigable waterway?
It's not attached. Pete and I looked at the site
case,
online.
Maybe.
Okay, we're getting silly here. We're talking about cable TV installation to somebody's house.
Right, that would not fall under requirements.
Well, I think what he's saying is...
I think he wants it to.
If that wetland went through someone's backyard and was connected to something that the feds had jurisdiction over, you would.
Be subject to a notice of violation.
Yep. And we keep kind of missing the federal aspect of this over and over. And that's been my biggest problem with all of this wetland stuff is we keep thinking, well, as long as we follow the NAR or NAR standards, we don't have to prove federal laws, and we're missing the connection to NAFTA.
And what I'm saying is I don't believe we'll run into an instance like that because the layout of a cable or telephone system will keep it away from the wetlands. And if it does, Time Warner deserves it.
Well, they're going to take the shortest route every time.
But they would deserve to get their hands slapped.
Anyways, my concern comes from the fact that the heading of 2 is a site meeting any one of the following criteria is exempt from stormwater quality requirements. So if they're installing an underground utility construction, they're exempt.
That means they don't have to meet the TSS removal. That doesn't mean they can bore through wetlands.
Who's monitoring the TSS when they're operating equipment out there? You know, I don't want to argue this one to death.
Well, but the thing is, this isn't erosion control. This is post-construction. So we're saying they don't have to put in a pond if they're going to put in cables. This isn't construction erosion control. This is post-construction. So there would be nothing for them. There is no TSS for them to meet in that case.
So if we're running a water line cross-country, we don't have to install ponds for post-construction kinds of things?
Right.
Okay.
But there's nothing quantitative about it. It's just underground utility. Underground, we just put a sewer in to the southern part of our city. It had significant impacts. It was underground. And when you open a trench,
but
so
we,
I'm assuming there was watering, there was...
So they would have had monitoring. To follow the erosion control TSS. They wouldn't have to follow post-construction TSS.
Yeah, that's correct.
Absolutely agree, but this points out again, smartest people in the room live in Madison. They make rules that require them to have more control over things, but then they limit the amount of assistance that you to make things happen in a timely manner. Makes perfect sense to me, goofballs. It just continues to reinforce what DNR really stands for. Right, Sarah? Don't need a reason. Kevin, you still have the floor?
Yeah, I think we're almost done here. I was looking on page 34.
You're jumping ahead.
Oh, I'm moving. Coach, I was going to try to keep this short. And it was pretty well done.
An hour later.
Well, it was pretty well done. I don't know that I have an issue there, but H points out very clearly, wetland boundary delineation shall be made in accordance. So that reference is in here in a lot of places. And I bring it up because I think early in the game, developers need to be made aware. You can't come through with the wetland delineation halfway through the process. You're going to have to do it right up front. As was indicated, it may not be easy or quick. You need to find somebody to get it done. I think that's it. I will surrender the floor.
Any other issues, questions from the commission? Commissioner, City Engineer.
Just a comment. I want to publicly thank Sarah for tackling us by the horns. And she haven't, obviously, I don't have experience here in Wisconsin.
It's Wisconsin.
Wisconsin. See, I'm still learning that, too. So, jeez. Let alone the wetland rules.
Can't take the Husker out of you.
Who's your?
Alderman Wilhelm.
Yes, because that's the minimum that the DNR requires. So we're going to match that minimum, although I'll be asking the council for permission to study this in more detail and provide some recommendations if we would want to differ from that.
Because when you're talking about less susceptible wetlands, who's going to...
Kristen, use the mic, please, so it goes on the record.
Referencing less susceptible wetlands, I'm wondering who's going to make that call. And if you're going to go just by, oh, there's reed canary grass, I can tell you there's hardly a wetland around that isn't impacted by some amount of reed canary grass. And if you don't provide better protection, not only do you have reed canary grass to begin with, it's going to become an even more degraded wetland. So I don't know. With the amount of invasive species that are out there right now, you're not going to find a lot of pristine wetlands, but do you want to make them worse? Or, you know, who's going to make this call? How is this going to be determined? You can have a developer who doesn't want to protect something say, found reed canary grass there. But are they going to be looking for the other species? What year or what time of year of the growing season are they going to go out and look for the plants? Do they have a botanist person who knows what they're looking at to catch a endangered species that's out there? So I don't know about that one. That one's pretty wide open.
Okay, Steph will work on that too. Anything else? Commissioner Haley?
One other thing besides, again, to say this was well done. It was probably not an easy task. I just want to reiterate it. I don't have it in front of me, but I did read in here that when there's a difference between ours and DNR standards, the most restrictive will apply. We all in agreement with that, or did that go away?
Nope. We talked about that for protective areas. All I know for protective areas, we talked about that language. We did not add it. If that language is in here, it would be for something else.
Well, don't we think it should be there for all of the, for any standards that are set?
Mr. City Engineer, Attorney.
Statutory, it's under the zoning statute 6223 sub 7 sub G. If local ordinance is more restrictive than the statute, if the ordinance was created enabled under 6223, ordinance controls. Second go round on it, it also says if the statute is more restrictive, it does not specifically say a local ordinance can be less restrictive. And the local ordinance is less restrictive, the statute controls, more restrictive controls. And this ordinance is under zoning authority as well as land division authority, so it will be going to public hearing again to the Common Council. And just for information of the Plan Commission, there are three very minor changes that to the unhighlighted copy in the packet. I don't know that they're worth putting on the record, but they are contained in Sarah's highlighted draft. So it's on pages 1, 2, and 3. And just delete a sentence here and put a definition in there. That was about it.
Is there a motion to recommend approval of an ordinance to amend the Unified Development Ordinance text within Part 8, that being improvements and construction, to update its provisions and incorporate Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, Wisconsin Administrative Code, I didn't read this first, so that Wisconsin Administrative Code standards and regulations as they pertain to erosion control and stormwater management and construction site and post-construction site performance standards, including but not limited to the provisions of the Department of Natural Resources Chapter 151 of the Wisconsin Administrative Code, and to support the development of green infrastructure subject to the corrections based on discussions this evening.
So moved.
Second.
Discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion carries. Move on to D1, letter A. Is there a motion to approve a resolution imposing conditions and restrictions for the approval of a temporary use seasonal weekly car show for on a property located at 6514 South Lovers Lane Road? We know it as Gus's.
So moved.
Second.
Discussion? Seeing none, all those
in favor. Just one question for staff.
Commissioner Haley.
No issues with last year?
Nope.
Continues to go on.
First year was the only one that I recall had issues. Not nonsense.
Good to hear.
So the answer was no.
No. Correct.
Move on to item D2, Garden Plaza Weekly's Farmers Market being proposed by William.
Get a vote.
Oh, my apologies.
All right, we're here to keep
all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Mr. Giedel.
Staff was recommending table.
For the farmer's market?
Yeah. For the farmer's market.
No, yeah. We were taking the vote on Gus's.
Oh, still Gus's? Gus's? Okay, I thought we went to the next one.
Is there a motion to table a temporary resolution for the farmer's market?
So moved.
Till June 7th? June 9th? Joel?
What, the next?
Till June 9th.
And the reason?
Second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Motion to go bye-bye.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion carries.